Welcome home. We are WNST. Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We are positively here at Fadley's. It's new. It's beautiful. It's delightful. Luke Jones joins me here. We're going to be here each and every Friday. I'm going to have Maryland Lottery scratch-offs the minute I get them out of my bag. I have Pac-Man scratch-offs, but it's baseball season, Luke. We have new ownership. Cal Ripken's involved in ownership. All the young guns are up. Jackson Holliday is debuting.
That's right.
Everything good's going on here this week, and it's good to have you here. How's our crab cake, man?
Yeah, crab cake was delicious. Thank you, Fadley's, for that, but so much excitement. I was thinking about it on my car ride down downtown this afternoon and just thinking the draft is 2 weeks away.
And the look, NFL draft.
Yeah,
the
right. NFL draft, and right. Look, once that comes 2 weeks, you know, a couple Thursdays from now, people will be excited. That day will drown out whatever's going on. I think the Orioles are off that night, actually. But there's a lot of excitement for that when it comes. But in the meantime, I feel like everyone's focused on baseball, and specifically with Jackson Holliday this weekend, first Friday night home game to kick off a three-game set. It's the Brewers, Corbin Burnes going against his former team on Sunday. D.L. Hall
I'm going scheduled Sunday, by the way.
There you go.
75 you're degrees.
You're going to see,
you know
see Burnes pitch. D.L. Hall's going to pitch Saturday. Joey Ortiz should be in the Milwaukee lineup. So you have all these storylines, but oh yeah, it comes back to Jackson Holliday, and not just Jackson Holliday. Jackson Churio, one of the other 20-year-old mm-hmm. Jacksons in Major League Baseball right now, on the other side, and he's off to a really good start. So there are so many for a mid-April series.
Can't ask for more.
The Brewers are off to a good start. You know, they're an interesting team because I think when everyone saw the Burnes trade, your assumption is, all right, I guess the Brewers are rebuilding. But they still have a lot of really talented baseball players, including a couple former Oriole prospects that are now in the mix there. And you know, I don't think they consider themselves being written off whatsoever. They knew they weren't going to sign Corbin Burnes long-term, but I think they felt like, okay, let's make this move, but we still have a lot going for us. They signed Rhys Hoskins in the offseason as well, and they're off to a decent start. So, you know, it's mid-April baseball. The significance of the series itself as it pertains to the standings isn't really there yet, other than just one of 162 or three of 162. But yeah, there's some buzz. There's definitely going to be some energy throughout the weekend at the ballpark. And what more can you ask? I mean, the club's off to a good start, a sweep at Fenway, Jackson Holliday. I get it. First couple games, it's been a little rough, but he's 20 years old. Let the kid just go out there and play and come up for air in a couple weeks and see where he is at that point. But there's just so much to be excited about as an Orioles fan at this point in time. On the field, off the field, of course, with new ownership. And, I mean, it's just you hear the sky's the limit a lot in sports. I mean, that's one of the more popular sports cliches talking about good teams. But the Orioles, the possibilities do feel limitless right now for them as it pertains to what's on the field. What's coming off the field in terms of ownership and what all that's going to entail. That I think back to the good old days, and they always said it was great to be young in an Oriole. And I think that's true for the Orioles, but I think it's especially true for this fan base after not a whole lot to write home about for really the last 40 years.
For me, with this Brewers thing and like the AL-NL thing, and how do you feel about not seeing the Yankees more, not seeing, I mean, we saw the Red Sox for a couple minutes. I grew up on the Brewers, man. My dad would take me out to see Caldwell pitch, and, you know, obviously, Sisto Lescano was my guy. Don't see these teams much. And when I see a team like Milwaukee and I think about Corbin Burnes, I'm thinking, well, they didn't have the money to sign him. And I go back to this. We need to be a franchise that has the money to sign that kind of guy. Grayson Rodriguez might be that guy for us 3 years from now, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are two factors at work here, and we talked about this when the Orioles had gotten their payroll up to, you know, about the top 10 range in the Duquette era. You know, there was a point where they got to that point. They're spending money. There's also spending it wisely, and you want to be able to do both, right? You want to be in a position where, yes, you're going to be a team that clearly values player development, whether it's whether it's through the amateur draft or the international market, where the Orioles are starting to really make some hay there. But you also want to be in a position that when you draft and develop and bring these guys to the major leagues, that you can then keep them for the long haul. That doesn't mean you're going to sign everyone. That doesn't mean you should sign everyone. A couple years ago, people were talking about, are the Orioles going to extend Cedric Mullins? Are the Orioles going to extend Trey Mancini? Are the Orioles going to extend someone like Austin Hayes? And I would challenge right now and say that's those probably wouldn't be the best investments at this point in time. So the point is,
I saw that Santander home run the other night.
Sure, and look, I'm not saying that there aren't scenarios where some of that makes sense, but the point is, you're not going to keep everyone. There is going to be a certain amount of roster churn, and that's healthy. You know, the Ravens, I think, would still operate that way, even if the salary cap was exponentially higher or non-existent. I think there's still something to be said for younger, cheaper, better. And, you know, it was just a few weeks ago, you and I talked about this a lot, and I wasn't the only one, because Colton Cowser's a top five pick just a few years ago, but there was a lot of talk in terms of how are the Orioles going to get him into the lineup when you have these three outfielders who have been here, were here when it was terrible. They were here to see the turnaround through. In the case of Mullins and Hayes, two guys who've been to All-Star games, how are you going to get Colton Cowser into the lineup? And I just said, you have to be able to make it work, because these guys get to AAA, and you talk all you want about a top farm system. Well, you then need to integrate them. You then need to start to work them into the mix. And that doesn't mean Austin Hayes is buried now moving forward. Colton Cowser could go 0 for his next 20, and we're having a different conversation next week.
He's making his way into being my favorite Oriole early on.
Right,
Colton Cowser,
right. But the point is, you have these great young players. They're, you know, we've talked a lot, and we talked about this a lot last year when it came to the trade deadline. We talked about that inflection point, right? We're at a point now talking about the Orioles where you've had a team that's won 101 games, been to the postseason, won the division last year. Fantastic, right? But we know that there's more talent on the way. And the reality is, Nestor, I'm not saying all those guys are going to be better, and not all those guys are even going to pan out. But some of the guys that are playing in Norfolk right now are going to be better than guys that are playing in Baltimore right now. And they're going to be younger. They're going to be cheaper. And, yes, that still is going to matter regardless of new ownership. So it's all about a churn. It's all about kind of massaging how this is going to go roster-wise.
Feelings, hurt feelings, and where the Trey Mancini thing was. Yeah, I mean, Houston turned players over down there early on. You know, so some guys that were there in the beginning weren't there when they were pile diving after they cheated, I might add. But that's going to happen here. I don't know if they win a World Series this November, because it never happens in October anymore, but when they win it this October and they go on a run, one of these guys ain't going to be here. I don't know who it is. I don't know if they'll deal Mountcastle, whether they would deal Mullins, whether they would deal Hayes. I get the vibe that the team will be constructed as we sit here. It's not even tax day.
Yeah.
It's not even April 15th yet. I can sit here and say 6 months is a long time in a baseball season.
Well, and even more so just the trade deadline. I mean, that's not even 6 months. That's another, you know, 3.5 months away. So, yeah. And we look at this roster, and look, I talked a lot about the bullpen in the offseason. I'm not moving off of that, although the bullpen has been very good early on, and that's great. And that I never thought the bullpen was going to be bad. It's just a matter of, do you have enough guys that are going to handle high leverage when you don't have Felix Bautista coming through that bullpen door in the ninth?
Well, who you think the star is going to be and who it's going to be? I mean, they picked the guy up yesterday.
They did.
Right? I mean, again, we keep going back to Fuji, and we keep going back to Coulomb, right?
Yeah.
There's your upside. There's your downside.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and also Cano.
Cano.
Right? Obviously. There's your upside. Now's your downside of your upside. Because he's going to the Hall of Fame if he was going to do May for the rest of his career.
Sure, sure. And no one, and of course he wasn't going to keep that up, but then it becomes, okay,
we'd have a closer.
Right. You have a closer, but then it's a case of, okay, is he going to be a legitimate, reliable, eighth inning guy who can close games on occasion? Now, he tried to close a game a few days back. It didn't go so well, but that's going to happen too. Coulomb gave up a home run at Fenway on a Thursday night. You know, you're going to have some of that, but in the meantime, and I think this is, You pointed this out, I know, a lot when we talked about this during spring training, that, you know, Mike Elias, chances are things that we're talking about that are potential concerns, potential pitfalls for them, he and the baseball ops department, they're well aware, right? They're looking at, you know,
they're
running
smarter than the fans.
They're running the projections. They're running the simulations in terms of, okay, you know, we brought this guy in, or this guy who pitched really well last year, but we know how relievers year to year are very unreliable. There's so much noise year to year. You know, for every Mariano Rivera, there's 100 guys that have a really good season, and then they're terrible the following year, right? I mean, it's just how it works. So I think he's viewing it through the lens of, we have plenty of capital, plenty of resources to go make moves when we need to. So let's wait. Let's evaluate with what we have. Our bullpen is not so bad, or our rotation isn't so bad, that we're not going to be right in the thick of things at least. So let's evaluate. Let's make sure that we're not acquiring something that we don't really need if someone emerges and is just unbelievable, like Felix Bautista 2 or 3 years ago. And let's evaluate. And oh, yeah, that reliever that was really good for the Cincinnati Reds last year, and I'm just making that up. I'm not even
sure.
He might not be as good this year. So we acquire him in spring training or we acquire him in April and we might get our feelings hurt. So,
well, the Twins were looking at Cano in June and saying, what do we do, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Cano, we talked about that a lot. Jorge Lopez 2 years ago. I talked about that a lot in terms of, were you getting enough upside there? And you end up, you have some pitching prospects.
Well, Elias was a genius in that deal,
sure.
Right?
Sure. But there's another perfect example. Jorge Lopez, since that year where he was an all-star reliever, it's gone sideways for him. Again, relief pitching is just so noisy. It's so noisy that it's so important, especially in this day and age where starters aren't going more than 5 or 6 innings in most cases. But at the same time, it's really, really slippery trying to identify who's going to be really good, who you should commit money to, who you should commit multi-year deals to, which is very few and far between. So, you know, in the meantime, you have Keegan Aiken pitching really, really well for them in April. Now, is he going to keep that up? Is he going to be an eighth inning guy for them come June or July? History would say probably not, but maybe he will be. And then, hey, you have another high leverage guy instead of a long reliever as he was projected to be. So the point is,
well, Kimbrel's got to be good.
Sure.
When Kimbrel comes in the game in the ninth inning, he can't be blowing saves.
No question. No question about it. At the same time, when they acquired him, when they signed him, they, through all their statistical models where they're looking at all the different outcomes of what they think he's going to be based on his age, based on what his statistics were, what his biomechanics were last year, all, velocity, all those different things. None of those scenarios projected out to him being as good as what Felix Bautista was last year. So the point was, this was always going to be an ensemble effort in terms of replacing someone like Bautista. And by the way, even if Bautista was healthy, he might not have been
He's
as dominant this year as
year.
Last
right.
year.
Yeah.
Right. And again, that was the other part of it, too, just the workload in general. So, you know, I mean, it's a living canvas, right? I mean, we talk about this a lot with the Ravens, and we'll get to football at some point in time in our conversation that, you know, Eric DaCosta at the pre-draft luncheon this past week said, we're not preparing to play football in May. We're preparing to play in September. And, you know, the Orioles aren't preparing to play October baseball right now. They need to play well enough to get there, but there's a lot of ongoing evaluation, and it brings it back to the point that you made that come August 2nd, you know, August 15th, September, October, of course, yeah, this roster is going to look different, and it might be some prospects that are down at AAA Norfolk being traded, or it might be an Austin Hayes combined with a couple prospects to go get a reliever or go get a starting, you know, whatever it would be.
They need another number 4 starting pitcher? Are they looking for something? Now, Bradish and Means are in a different category for this organization. First, they expect to win the World Series. They expect to win the division. They know they're going to be competitive. They know these are two is's that they're waiting on that. And Kramer can hold some water and Wells and, you know, the guys that they've been working with. But I'm trying to project into June and July and saying, all right, Means is no good or not good enough or
isn't healthy.
Bradish takes the knife. Terrible things happen. Because you have to – what's the worst-case scenario?
You have to prepare for the worst,
Worst-case scenario would be a major leaguer, a key prospect, and some other Delaware River Valley mud for a pitcher that would – probably look like Tyler Wells or Cole Irvin or somebody
else.
Kyle Gibson is exactly where I would go.
Exactly. I mean,
Yes.
The stock answer is you never have enough pitching, right? I mean, we're seeing what's going on around baseball with, you know, the Tommy John epidemic that isn't new to this year. I mean, it's something that's been ever increasing for a long time. I think it's just magnified when you see how many big names have gone down this year. So, yeah, I think you're always going to be looking for starting pitching. And because of what you just mentioned, I mean, John Means, he's 3 rehab starts in. I think he threw 60 pitches his last time out for Norfolk. So he's probably, you know, realistically, 2.5 weeks away, maybe.
Okay. What does it
look like, though? How effective is he? What's the velocity look like? Is his elbow feeling good? Is he recovering every fifth day? Bradish, he joined single-A Aberdeen. First start was going to get washed
well,
out.
Well, the good news is they're pitching. Right. They're not under the knife. They're not, right. you know, on the
and,
side.
And look,
the side,
I mean, in the case of Means, my understanding, and as it's been explained, you know, going back to the start of spring training, if you recall, everyone thought he was going to be their number three starter in the division series, and then Brandon Hyde announced, you know, he had some elbow soreness, you know, from the sim game that he threw. They shut him down. What they did was they basically shut him down for a couple months after that, and they just said, look, you rehabbed, you got back, you pitched well in September. We're not playing any more meaningful games for another 5 months, whatever it was going to be. We're going to slow you down. We're going to slow play you because we know you're not going to come back in your first full year back from Tommy John and throw 200 innings anyway. So let's slow play you. We're going to start you a little bit later for the start of spring training. You started throwing progression, all that. You're not going to pitch in the spring. You're not going to pitch the first 3 weeks of April.
Not really unlike what they did last year.
I mean,
a little bit.
I mean, he was still recovering.
They
I mean,
were waiting
he,
on him.
Right. I mean,
year.
He was still
yeah.
in the recovery. And remember, he actually had a back or lat strain that kind of slowed him down too, you know, as he was getting closer and closer to pitching. So the point is, they said, this isn't an April move. This isn't a May move. This is a move for September and October again. This is a move for wanting you at your best later in the year. So in Means's case, I don't really think, and again, you never know because it's Tommy John surgery, and even though it's a 90%+ return rate, it's not 100%. But I don't think there's a concern with him as much as how he's feeling, as much as just, yeah, he's just got to build up. So, and then we'll see how he looks. Bradish, to me, now is where it becomes interesting. He threw live batting practice. He's going to get on the hill for Aberdeen at this point. Competitive, legitimate, professional baseball, albeit at a lower minor league level. How's the elbow responding then? How's he feeling where it's max effort? He's throwing all of his pitches. To this point, so far, so good. It's great. I mean, he could have been shut down the second week of March after the initial announcement and already be a month into Tommy John recovery. So he's made it farther than I think a lot of people thought he might at this point. But to me, this is now where we say, okay, how real is this? What's the velo look like? What do the pitches look like? How are you feeling? How's the command? Command is often the thing to go before velocity when you're talking about elbow and shoulder issues. So, you know, it's so far so good. But long answer to what your original question was, I think you're definitely going to be looking for
what would be
rotational depth.
If we're sitting here when the Ravens kick off, September 12th, they'll kick off. We'll get the schedule next week, right?
Yeah.
Whenever they kick off, to think that we could project what the rotation would be and who's in it and how they're pitching and how they're going to feel in October, you better hope Burns and Rodriguez
sure.
are,
I mean, those
25
are the,
starts
yeah.
in, right? And that you're playing, you know, 6'10 ball at that point, or, you know, 590 ball, whatever you're going to need to be that team. And who, what is the rotation? I mean, I said something flippantly to you the other day about, does that make Kramer the number four or the number five? I'm assuming there's a three-man rotation in October
yeah.
early going, and I'm assuming we know who the number one and two are if they hold up. Who would the three and the four and the five be? They're not going to go to a four or five.
Four-man rotation you do
but
in a seven-game series.
If Kramer's your third and these other guys are there and you never hear from Means again, you never hear from Bradish again this year, with the bullpen, can they win 92 games? Can they
yeah.
can they get to the forest?
Yeah.
Right? Can they get to October? And what kind of position are they going to be in if what they have right now is all they have? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If they're
going to
go out and scuffle through four and five every night and have Kramer be sort of a tweener, and even Rodriguez got beaten up early
yeah.
in Boston the other night.
Although he recovered pretty nicely
he's
overall.
He's basically
yeah.
a rookie.
Yeah.
We're talking about the dude like he's Jim Palmer.
Sure.
He's a rookie. You know,
and Carter he's been really good since the All-Star break
yeah,
last year.
Yeah. I understand that,
yeah.
but you're really, we're at the point where we were with an early Messina. You're relying on it.
Oh, sure.
You're relying on a young guy to be a top of the rotation guy for a team that's not hoping to win, expected to win.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
And that's not a bad thing, right? I mean, he's 24. Like,
I can't believe we're talking about this stuff down here with Pac-Man tickets. And
yeah.
We're talking about a contending team. You and me having crap.
I mean, they were contending last year. I mean, they
were. With new ownership.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Jackson Holiday.
It's fun. But a lot of what you just laid out, you know what? That's most contenders. Other contenders, other teams. I mean, look at the Astros now. I mean, first of all, they're off to a bad start. New manager, obviously, so you have the dusty effect. And a couple pitchers, starting pitchers on the shelf now. I mean, it's looking dicey for them. They'll probably be okay, but boy, you talk about the Orioles, you know, rotation questions, just the general ones we've had, you know, since the announcements about Bradish and Means at the beginning of spring training. But, you know, look at the Yankees. It's Garrett Cole.
I was going to say, look at the Yankees. They got questions.
I mean,
they're
Garrett
questioning
Cole.
Why they haven't won a World Series in 15 years.
Sure.
That's the first thing they're questioning.
Right. Absolutely. 15 years, although I don't want to hear about it after 40, but going on 41. But that's the... That's why I said, you know, in the same way that Ozzie Newsome said you can never have too many corners, you know, you can never have too many starting pitchers. I mean, it's just the truth. And by the way, your premise, you said it about, you know, with Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez, but, like, you want to keep these guys healthy in general. Like, they're already, you know.
Burnes went out on an extra day this week, and that pushed Irvin to 8 days.
Yeah.
And with the schedule, because
they didn't want to have
that's going to happen.
Yeah. And you're going to do that for.
You don't really have a 5-man rotation in April.
Right. You have
really.
A 4.5, really. With all these off days, you know, obviously you get into the meat of the schedule, you have a little bit of less of that. So Hyde in general wants to give these guys an extra day when they can. They flipped Burnes and Irvin because they didn't want. Burnes would have gone a whole week because there were two off days in between his turns. So, you know, I just think it's, you know, Cole Irvin as your number five. It's not great. It's not what they drew up over the offseason, right? I mean, he would have been kind
Kramer's
of more like
their five. That's
seven.
That's incredible.
Exactly.
When we're
exactly.
talking about this in January, Kramer's their five?
That's sure.
That's a different outlook for the weekend.
Absolutely. And we see how he's pitched well. You know, he's pitched really well. So, you know, he started game three, albeit didn't go well for him.
Well, I mean, I talked to you a couple weeks ago. I don't even remember where we were. We were somewhere. And just about the Atlanta Braves and having that sort of young – we're going to compete. We're going to golf together. We're going to do crosswords together. We're going to fish together. We're going to compete together. We're, you know, you got Monday. I got Tuesday. If you know, if you give up three on Monday, I got to give up two on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, and
that's kind of.
And that's what was fun about Corbin Burnes, who's not young. I mean, he's 29. You know, he's young. He's not old, but he's not as young as these other guys. But Grayson Rodriguez, I mean, we talked to him after his first start, which was really, really effective. He said that. You know, Burnes talked a little bit of trash. Like, it was playful competition, but it's still competition to say, hey, I need to one-up you.
He's young.
But that's what you have. And you bring in someone like Corbin Burnes to be what Kyle Gibson was last year, only way better individually. And Gibson was better than what Jordan Lyles was the year before that. So this is like version two or version three of that veteran presence. But, oh, yeah, this guy won a Cy Young Award just a few years ago. So... I mean, it's exciting. It really is. And look, you knock on wood, cross your fingers, say a little prayer that guys stay healthy because it's a big part of it. You mentioned the Braves. I mean, Spencer Strider, how amazingly talented he is. And now, you know, he's hurt. You know, you're seeing it across baseball.
It's like having your quarterback get hurt, right?
That's why you need as much as this. Well, the quarterback goes down like that. That's one entity that it's over. Baseball, it's not like that unless you have.
If Corbin Burnes went down right now without a Means and without a Bradish, they would really be in a lot of trouble. Now,
could they still be a wild card or something like that? Sure.
That would be somewhere they'd really have to go out and trade something. They'd have to trade Couser to get a pitcher.
Right? I mean,
it would be. Wouldn't want to do that.
You wouldn't have that guy that you say, hey, he's our game one starter. I mean, you know, assuming Bradish doesn't come back.
And I don't Snoop Huntley in Cincinnati.
Right.
And
let me be clear. I don't want to assume that Bradish isn't coming back, but let's say he comes back, but we get a lesser version of Bradish than a year ago. Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be a good scenario for them. But that's every team. Again, there are very few teams out there where they are looking at their top four starters and saying, wow, we have no questions whatsoever. We have no health concerns whatsoever, anything like that. So, you know, I mean, this team just, they have a lot going for them. And it's not perfect, but... I mean, it's funny. I made the joke to my brother the other day. I was watching MLB Network on TV, and they have their show MLB Central, which has, like, Mark DeRosa, Robert Flores, Lauren Shahadi, and they have Sean Casey on some. It's actually of those types of that genre of sports shows, I actually enjoy that one, unlike very many out there. But I joked to my brother. I said, you know what? If this was any team but the Orioles, you know what I'd be saying right now? My gosh, all they do is talk about the Yankees, or all they do is talk about the Braves, or all they do is talk about the Dodgers. They've talked about the Orioles all week. Like, all week.
The Jackson Holliday thing, you talked about him being a dugout at Fenway the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston's got a huge contingent of national media that are just, like, in that area. It was must-see for media people in Boston on Wednesday, like it's going to be must-see here this weekend for
Absolutely.
Jackson Holliday.
Oh, there was a lot of excitement there. And, again, the Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio storyline, the trade storyline, all of this. But when you have a 20-year-old that you're calling up And, you know, the scenario for this is different than Manny Machado at 11 years ago, because that was such a very specific need that the Orioles had at that point in time. They don't need Jackson Holliday right now. And I don't say that in terms of, yes, he improves their upside. Yes, he's better than what they had at second base.
They didn't have to do this, which means how convicted they were to bring him up.
But that's the whole idea of you are bringing in this type of a talent at this age, this rapid of a development, to augment a team that won 101 games last year. I mean, that is so exciting. I mean, when Machado got called up, you know, it was very surprising, but they had such a need at third base because they had Wilson Betemit, who couldn't, you know, maybe he would field every other ground ball, you know, hit a little bit, but not so much that you could accept his defensive shortcomings. So Manny came up, and the idea was, you know, we don't need you to be a superstar, but we need you to play good third base. So I think from that standpoint, Holliday is at an advantage because he's not being caught up and being placed in the three hole immediately or anything like that. He's not in a position where they need him to carry them offensively. So that's where I said, yeah, he struck out a little bit more than you'd like to see the first couple games, and it's looked a little choppy, there's no doubt, but that's okay. In the meantime, they have eight other guys they're putting out in their lineup that, you know, maybe not all of them are hitting, but a lot of them are hitting. And, you know, you have all these guys that are established, and, you know, you're good with Jackson Holliday getting his feet wet. And, you know, if he goes 0 for the weekend, I'm still not going to be panicking at that point in time. Just let him go out there and play. But
I'm just making sure I can give him a Pac-Man lottery ticket because it says 18 years.
I was going to say, he is 18.
Yeah. He's 18. Yeah. Okay,
he's 20 and married. Believe it. I mean, that's
a 20-year-old kid even knows what Pac-Man is, or do you?
Probably not.
No.
Yeah, that's actually a really. That's funny.
Did you play Pac-Man?
Yeah, I had an Atari.
I was thinking you was being young.
I had an Atari. That
turns out you're cool.
I had an Atari that was a hand-me-down from my older cousin. I was always the kid that got the video game system a couple years after it came out. So like Nintendo, when it went from Nintendo to Super Nintendo, that's when I got a Nintendo finally. When it went from Sega Genesis to Super Sega or whatever it was, that's when I got a Sega Genesis. So
I never had a gaming device when I was a
Pac-Man,
kid.
Yeah.
I had baseball cards.
Miss Pac-Man, who has the bow, right? You know. That's actually a,
I've just said,
it's a joke from
Wayne's
World.
They have a grand prize for this where you get the big game, right? I keep saying to John Martin, I played a Pac-Man machine over at CFG Bank Arena a couple weeks ago in their vault room, and they had a big machine, and the joystick was sticky. You got to get that joystick where it works a little bit, because the joystick could get you blown up. If you know, bad joystick, bad game. Pac-Man, good game. Maryland Lottery bringing it to you here. Our friends at Liberty Pure, as well as Jiffy Lube, MultiCare. We're Fadley's. Is the new and improved, dare I say, Cal can't even improve on a Fadley's crab cake. I don't think it says right here, Alan Richmond. All others were forgotten. However, the moment I tasted the big lump crab cake at John W. Fadley's Seafood. So we're going to give a shout-out to Nancy and Bill, who are recovering, but they're going to have a grand opening down here. We're at the new Lexington Market. Luke's already had his first new Lexington Market crab cake. I had my second because I was here on opening day. One of us has a press credential. One of us is under review right now. We'll let you know which one that is. But it's a weekend of great baseball here. Cal Ripken, new ownership, number 7, Jackson Holliday. Even at Brewers, I can get even for 1982 and get after Harvey's Wallbangers. Come down and see us. We're going to be here each and every Friday. 2 weeks from today, we'll be here again. Sheila Dixon, Shannon Sneed, both running for public city office. Shannon Sneed running for city council president. And, of course, Sheila Dixon, former mayor, running for mayor again. We'll be here a little later on. We've had John Allen this week. I've had Keith Brewer this week talking about the 25th anniversary documentary, which is going to, and I'm breaking the news, it's coming out at 5:08 on April the 25th, right before the NFL draft. So the Ravens pick late in the night. Give you half an hour to sit around and watch my crazy life story. Have really, really good photos of Luke. Luke is very photogenic. He looks much younger than me in a lot of this. But I do look young in the beginning of this because I was young in the beginning of this. 40 years into this, 32 years into sports radio, 26 years now into WNST. And it's the first time we've sort of been live in downtown doing pregame baseball. Glenn Clark and I did something maybe 2012 when the team got decent again for a minute. We did a couple of things like on Cross Street, but there's nobody down on Cross Street at 2:00 on a Friday, even when it's an Oriole game, right? I'm talking 15 years ago. I used to be at Hooters Live 92, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, till about 99. Maybe the first 7 or 8 years, until I got syndicated, because then I couldn't plan anything. I could, I had no way to do the show at Hooters
right.
in 99, 2000, 2001. We never really went back. I never did the show there again. It's been 25 years. But it feels good to be downtown watching, like, at this hour, it's early here, 2 o'clock, you know, people are walking by. See a random City Connect jersey or a hat.
Yeah.
Dude. You're going to leave early because he's got a press credential. And I'm going to be here talking to Sheila Dixon and Shannon Sneed. But by the time Sheila Dixon leaves here at 5 o'clock, this place is going to be asses and elbows. It's going to be orange. It's going to be a Jackson Holiday.
It's a lot of buzz.
Yeah, and we're 3 blocks from the ballpark. And I love these folks here at Fadley's and the Divine family. So Damian's going to join us talking about the big move. They moved over here about 3 weeks ago. Took them 150 years to get here. They're going to be opening in Catonsville. Probably through the winter. I learned that today. So our friends at Fadley's, our friends at the Maryland Lottery, Luke is here. One more segment. We're going to get some football in before it's all over with as well. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We're at Lexington Market in the new Fadley's. Stay with us. We're having some fun down here talking baseball.